You are listening to Adventures in Buddhism. I'm your host, Morris Sullivan. There's an idea we encounter when we begin to study Buddhism that we are practicing in order to achieve something, to gain something, to attain enlightenment, to progress on the path, to reach nirvana. And then we find this contradictory idea, which we find said in several different ways. Nirvana is already here. Samsara is nirvana, and so on. It can be very confusing, so I'm going to explore this in this episode, and hopefully as we go along, you'll find some ways to work with this idea in your own practice. I want to start with a parable from the Lotus Sutra. So there was a young man, a man from a poor family, who had become good friends with another young man whose family was quite wealthy. Well, one evening he went to visit his friend, and they spent a few hours talking and having dinner, drinking wine, things like that. As the evening wore on, this poor young man fell asleep. His wealthier friend had some business to attend to, so he had to leave. He didn't want to disturb his friend's sleep, but he wanted to give him a gift before he left. As he prepared to leave, he took a very nice, very valuable jewel from his family's treasury and sewed it into the hem of his guest's robe. The poor man awakened the next morning to find that his friend had left while he was asleep. He left the wealthy family's house to go about his own business, completely unaware that there was this jewel sewn into his robe. So he went about trying to make a living, but he didn't do very well. He wandered around the region, making his way from job to job, barely eking out an existence. It was a struggle, but he accepted it with some contentment, or at least resignation, and took whatever he managed to get. This went on for a few years, and then one day he happened to run into his old friend. His wealthy friend saw his nearly destitute condition and said, "Why are you living this way, struggling so hard? Why didn't you use the jewel I gave you?" Well, the poor young man had no idea what he was talking about. He didn't know he had this valuable jewel. The wealthy friend took out a knife, undid the hem of his robe, showed him the jewel. Of course, the poor man was quite thrilled with this. He sold the jewel, and he lived in comfort thereafter. Well, like that young man, each of us carries within us something very valuable, the ability to awaken to Buddhahood. We just need some help finding that for ourselves. If you ever visit White Sands Buddhist Center, you'll almost certainly see this saying, "Every step of the journey is the journey." You see it posted everywhere. It's on pillars, on t-shirts in the gift shop. It's done in calligraphy by the abbot, or now Suko Winan. I have one in my office, done in calligraphy by the abbot, Venerable Kaitin, and I treasure it. It hangs prominently on the wall in my office. Let's say you encounter a teaching like this and it resonates with you. What then? What does it mean? It sounds nice, like it might be true, but is it? And if it is, what do you do with it? So there's something kind of unique about sayings like this, and really about the Dharma in general. They're true if you use them. So when you encounter a teaching like this and it seems to click, you can unpack it, come to understand it on different levels. That means look specifically at it in terms of what it means to you. Not just how do you interpret it, but how do you embody it? The Buddha's teachings were intended to be lived, so the Dharma isn't to be memorized or preached or debated or any of that stuff. It's to be put to use. So when you look at what something like "every step of the journey is the journey" means to you, ask yourself, if I follow this instruction, how would my life change for the better? When I was visiting Florida a few months ago, I went to dinner with a fellow who's an old friend and a long-term Buddhist, and he frequently attends our services. And he started talking to me about some issue he was dealing with. I don't really remember what it was. And I made a suggestion about it, and he found that suggestion helpful. And he said, "Sensei, you're like a Swiss Army knife. You have a tool for every situation." Well, the Dharma is like that. It's useful for many situations. One of the guys in my group at the correctional institution had been a Zen student for a long time when I met him. He hadn't studied a lot of the foundational teachings of Buddhism, the teachings that come from the Pali Canon. So I'm a Zen monk, but my background includes a lot of other things. I spent a lot of time immersed in the original teachings of the historic Buddha. So the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, teachings on the not-self characteristic and impermanence and dependent origination and those kinds of things. Well, I had suggested that he study some of that stuff. And so we were talking about him, and one day he said, you know, this is really useful stuff. The Buddha didn't teach these things just to sound smart or to be mystical. It's about living a life with less stress, less suffering, more happiness, more meaning and purpose. It means connecting with things that transcend this mundane self, this lifetime. But it's also helpful in the here and now. So the Dharma is like a toolbox and holds a lot of different tools for dealing with different things. And you always have it with you. So it is a bit like a Swiss Army knife in that way. So my friend and I were joking around about that and about having Swiss Dharma knives in our pockets. So let's go back to this saying, every step of the journey is the journey. So that's not a fact. You know, the Earth is around 93 million miles from the sun, and that's a fact. It's probably not very useful information unless you're building a rocket or studying for a test in astronomy class or something like that. Every step of the journey is the journey. That's not a fact, but it can be useful. To be useful, even to understand its usefulness, you have to embody it by living it. So we tend to spend a lot of time focused on outcomes. It's human nature. We set goals, we focus on what we want to get and where we want to go. And that's fine. It's very important at times. I had a mentor once who would often say, begin with the end in mind. And that could be good advice in many circumstances. There's a monk at White Sands called Dharma Compassion, and he's been building a new commercial-grade kitchen there. Well, to do that, he had to begin with the end in mind. He had to know what he wanted to end up with, what he wanted to build, how it would be built, what materials to use, and even started out by drawing plans. So that helps prevent mistakes and missteps. If you didn't do that, you could make a real mess of things and have to redo a lot of work. But life is often not like that. Sure, we set goals, we make plans. But if we're not present every step of the way, we miss a lot of important things between birth and death, which would be what would happen if we focused on just the outcome. You can see this principle in action during meditation. What happens if you begin meditating with the end in mind? What's your meditation going to be like if you start out just focusing on the bell at the end? I can promise you that if you spend 25 minutes waiting for a bell to ring, you're going to be miserable. But what if you sit fully present with each moment, with each breath? You won't notice the passage of time at all, probably, and you'll feel really good. Some years ago, a group of college students from one of the fraternities on campus in DeLand came to visit our meeting. I'm not sure why, but for some reason they needed to visit a religious service that wasn't their own religious service. And so some of them were interested in Buddhism, so they showed up at our place. I had told them that there would be 20 minutes of silent meditation, and I asked, do you really want to do that? And they said, yes, they did. Well, within seconds of ringing the bell to start the meditation, I started hearing the sounds of boredom and discomfort. Feet shuffling, sighing, fidgeting, I'm sure you can imagine. So after I rang the bell to end the meditation, I asked them, how many of you, a little while after I rang the bell, started thinking, how long has it been so far? A number of hands went up. And then I asked, how many of you, after sitting there for a while, started wondering, how much longer do I have to sit here? And more hands went up. So I told them this story about the monk who was chased by a tiger. You may have heard this before, possibly even from me, but it's a good story. This monk was walking through the forest and he realized he was being stalked by a tiger. So he started walking faster. The tiger kept up with him. Pretty soon he knew the tiger was going to jump on him and he was running as fast as he could trying to escape. To his relief, he came to a cliff and started to scramble down the side. He thought he was free, but about halfway down he heard something below him. He looked down and sure enough, there was another tiger at the bottom of the cliff, looking up at him, licking its chops. So there he was, dangling on the side of a cliff between two tigers, each one wanting to eat him. He's holding onto a root that protrudes from the cliff, And as he's there, a couple of mice, one black and one white, come out of a crack in the rock and start gnawing on the root. Well, then he notices something. There's a wild strawberry plant growing on the cliff face, too. He reaches over and plucks the strawberry, popping it into his mouth. And it's so sweet. Well, I explained to the students that how long has it been is one tiger. How long until the bell rings is another tiger. The mice are constantly threatening to break your concentration and send you to one tiger or the other. But the strawberries, they're right here in this moment, this breath, this moment, this breath. That's where all the good stuff is. The principle of being present in the moment has practical applications too. When I moved from Florida to New England, there were a lot of tigers. There was uncertainty. Would I like it? Would it be hard to adjust to the cold? And there was pain. There was actual physical pain. By the time we got through getting set up, my knees were aching from carrying things up and down the stairs, and getting up and down off the floor, assembling furniture and things like that. But every step of the journey is the journey. We got where we were going. The furniture got put together. And there's always more to do. The trip is never really finished. But every moment is an opportunity to awaken. This isn't true of just the easy ones, the bliss during meditation or seeing the first blooms coming up through the snow. But the pains, the insecurities, it's all the journey. My teacher Koyo Kobose had a saying that relates to this. It's just two words, keep going. Our practice requires us to have things like patience, endurance, and commitment. It helps, really, if we don't get hung up on the idea of attainment or of reaching something. If we keep going, we can appreciate the beauty of each moment. So enjoy the trip, not just the destination. So while I was in Florida at White Sands, I was doing walking meditation one morning around the pond, and I stopped to take a break to sit on one of the benches for a moment and happened to look up at this pillar by the statue of Kwan Aum. And there was that saying, every step of the journey is the journey. And this thought arose, there is no journey. There is no journey. There's no place you have to go. There's nothing to attain because you have what you need. I told that parable earlier about the poor man with the jewel sewn into his robe. He had what he needed. All it really took was for his friend to take out his Swiss Dharma knife and open up that seam so he could see it. Like him, you have a valuable jewel. Wherever you are, it's with you. Buddha nature is always there. All you have to do is remember it. Wake up to it. So how would you use this new tool, there is no journey? Maybe begin the no journey with the no end in mind. People usually start out a spiritual journey because of stress or some sort of crisis, or maybe to avoid a crisis. We have the idea if we develop spiritual resilience, we can handle life's difficulties better, and that's true. Or maybe we're looking for answers to some of the big spiritual questions. Maybe you started to investigate Buddhism because you wanted to learn to meditate. Thought maybe that would give you less stress, more peace of mind. And then once you have less stress, you start to see, hey, there's more to this. Maybe you want to live a better life. Maybe feel connection to a community. So eventually you start to realize this path leads to something infinite, something eternal. What do you do with that? You might take the four great vows. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. That would be a big step in your journey, awakening to the no journey with an endless end. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Adventures in Buddhism. I hope today's teaching was useful to you and that you can put some of these tools to work in your own life. Now go save the world.